We welcome from the Jazz beat for the Salt Lake Tribune, Eric Walden. Charlie here in the studio. Eric, I appreciate the time. So do I have the order right? We'll be Stockton and Malone 1, Donnie and Marie 2, maybe Darren Williams, Carlo Boozer 3rd?
I think Darren Williams and Carlos Boozer would probably be a way further down the list. Not necessarily a whole lot of happy memories about those two.
Daryl Griffith and Thurl Bailey? Who replaces them for the bronze medal?
Oh, for the bronze medal. I don't know. Maybe we could go with like an odd couple. Greg Ostertag and Jeff Hornacek, something like that.
All right, that would work, taking it back to the mid-90s. Well, to the present, what do you think the Jazz found or should have found the most jarring about Game 1 getting out of hand?
Well, two things. First off, the way they defended James Harden absolutely did not work. I don't know that it's totally back to the drawing board with that, but they're definitely going to be trying something similar, but hope to improve their execution with that, try to stay with them a little bit longer. And then on the offensive side of the ball, they need to do something to free up Donovan Mitchell. The Rockets were really aggressive with him. They were really physical with him. They made it kind of difficult for him to initiate anything. And when he was able to find something, they just weren't knocking down shots. 7 of 27 from three-point range in game one. And, yeah, their offense is not going to work when they're shooting like that.
I want to follow up with you on Harden and some teams trying to take a page from Milwaukee, which, of course, has much longer and better defensive personnel than just about every other team in the NBA, but way, way overplaying Harden's left hand to force him to go right. Are they just going to try to employ that philosophy but better? One thing that jumped out, especially with Rubio, I mean, he was getting flat out behind Harden, so he could start right, but then he could actually take the dribble back to the left, and then he just had his choice of whatever he wanted to do.
Yeah, so the Jazz, I do believe, are going to be trying the strategy again, and yeah, hoping that they can tweak it, hoping they can run it a little closer to what Milwaukee did. Like you said, they were playing a little too far back. They weren't staying with him on the drive. You know, once he got his first step in, they were kind of letting him go, which honestly kind of defeats the purpose of it. I mean, you saw with Milwaukee, Eric Bledsoe kind of staying with him could bother him from behind. Giannis could swoop in from the weak side to bother him. They just weren't getting that kind of pressure and that kind of containment. And then once that happens, you know, it's like pick your poison with him. He's either going to the rim, forcing Rudy Gobert to step up and try to stop him. He's finding P.J. Tucker open in the corner, splashing threes. So, yeah, the way they employed it in Game 1 didn't work. They're definitely hoping to try to fix some of those issues tonight in Game 2.
Donovan Mitchell was a rookie last season, so learning experience, and the Rockets rendered him very inefficient as a scorer. His overall numbers weren't terrible in Game 1 other than zero assists. And if you're going to have the ball enough, even if you're not a true point guard, of course, guys have to make a shot once in a while when you find them. How do you think they hope Mitchell plays differently tonight, if that's part of it?
Yeah, so the one thing that Quinn Snyder mentioned yesterday as needing to happen tonight is that Donovan has to be quicker with his decision-making. With the Rockets switching everything on defense, there are going to be occasional moments where you can take advantage of those switches, you know, find an opening, take, you know, capitalize on something. And they felt like he was just hesitating a little bit too long, taking a little bit too long, kind of surveying the scene. And then by the time he decided to act and do something, whatever advantage they had evaporated. So they'll be looking for him to be more decisive, maybe go a little earlier in the clock. They talked about doing some things. They might have him handle the ball a little bit more tonight and attack from the top of the key. They're probably planning to run him through a few more off-ball actions, have the big men set some better screens. They need to do all of those things, frankly, to kind of get him a little more space to operate.
Talking with Eric Walden, Salt Lake Tribune on the Jazz beat ahead of Game 2 tonight at Toyota Center. Another late start, 8:35-ish. One guy I think I would put at least somewhat on the spot for the Jazz tonight, Eric. You know, we're going to go back to history. Rockets won Game 1 handily. And then Game 2, Jazz played very well, took it. Joe Ingles was great in that game, scored 27 points. He was a non-entity, at least positively, for Utah in Game 1. Now, he's not the type of guy apt to go off for 30, but 3 and only 4 field goal attempts in 32 minutes. I would think getting much more out of Ingles is essential to the Jazz's chances.
Yeah, that's absolutely a big key for the Jazz tonight. As you mentioned, yeah, Joe's not a huge scorer. His career high is 27, which he's hit a few times throughout his career. But, you know, he plays such an integral role to their offense, whether it's him spotting up in the corner for open three-pointers, where he's normally effective, whether it's him serving as a secondary ball handler behind Rubio when he's out of the game. He really just was kind of strangely passive in this game. I think one of the things really that bothered him is, you know, in Utah, his nickname is Slow-Mo Joe. He's not, you know, he doesn't have a quick first step. And so he really kind of had trouble beating the Rockets off the dribble, and that really kind of negated his effectiveness in pick and roll. He and Derek Favors have incredible chemistry together. A quarter of his assists this season were to Derek Favors, and he just wasn't able to kind of gain any traction going downhill and, you know, take advantage of that on the pick and roll. So they'll need to do something to kind of free him up as well. And you can expect to see a few more hard screens set for him at the three-point line, see if they can get him going downhill a little bit tonight.
A couple areas that coming into the series, and of course in an individual game or even a shorter series of games, well, it doesn't mean the 82-game trends are necessarily going to hold up. But Utah's one of the best defensive rebounding teams, one of the best rebounding teams, period, in the NBA. The Rockets were fourth worst, and yet the Rockets outboarded Utah in Game 1. Anything particular you feel goes into that? You wouldn't think it would be an effort thing in a Game 1 or just once the snowball started going and got out of hand. I can't see Utah winning a game in which the Rockets out-rebound them and the Rockets make more than twice as many three-pointers, given the fact we know the Rockets are going to jack up so many more three-pointers.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. That was one of the keys that we highlighted heading into the series was the Jazz's need to dominate the boards. You know, and you would expect that that would be the case. With the Rockets switching defense, a lot of times you're going to have, like, say, P.J. Tucker or Eric Gordon wind up down low against Rudy Gobert, and that situation needs to favor Utah. What we saw happen in Game 1 was they were so ineffective at containing Harden that it just forced Gobert to step up so often that it left him out of rebounding position quite a bit. So that's another thing they're going to need to tweak. You know, it's all kind of intertwined at this point, containing Harden, rotating over to the three-point shooters, and being able to grab those boards when the Rockets do miss.
I know there's no Lou Williams type off the Jazz bench, but geez, the bench was horrible the other night. And you alluded in the opening remarks, Eric, 7 of 27, 3. You know, you have a bad night, that's going to be difficult to overcome, 26% shooting from 3. But Jay Crowder stunk, 1 of 9 from the floor, 1 of 7 from 3. Cephalosha, I guess, is questionable. To me, that might be addition by subtraction. The guy can't shoot, so he's a liability offensively when he's out there. Kyle Korver, 10 minutes in Game 1, didn't even get a field goal attempt up. Who might you say is he better play well tonight if the Jazz is going to even the series?
Yeah,
off the bench.
So Kyle Korver's been dealing with a sore right knee, and honestly, before we came out to Houston, he'd missed a bunch of games in a row to end the regular season. When we saw him at practice, he had a huge ice pack wrapped around the knee. We honestly wondered if he was going to be playing in this series. He just hasn't looked quite right. He looked a little bit better at Jazz practice yesterday, so obviously if they can get him going from three-point range, that'll be helpful. And Jay Crowder, yeah, I mean, that guy, he's got no remorse putting the ball up, you know. He's got confidence for days. But the thing is, he's extremely hot and cold. He's extremely streaky. You know, there'll be nights where he's hitting 7 of 9 from deep and, like, really giving this Jazz team a boost. And then there are nights like Sunday night where 1 for 9 shooting overall, 1 for 7 from deep. And, yeah, they really are going to need some extra production out of him. If you can get a little bit from Royce O'Neal, that's spectacular. If you can get, like, a little bit here and there from Tabo Cephalosha, from Raul Neto, even better. But those are the main guys who've got to kind of step up and take care of business.
Any chance of Quinn Snyder, out of desperation or just tactically, playing a wild card? I know George Niang was getting some rotation minutes late in the regular season. Understood Grayson Allen's 40 came in a completely meaningless game, but either chance of those guys seeing the meaningful light of day?
I would say there's better chance that George Niang could than Grayson Allen could. I honestly probably don't expect Grayson to play much, if at all, in the series aside from garbage time. He's made some big progress down the stretch of the regular season from where he was most of the year, but I suspect they probably view his defense as not quite being playoff ready yet, unless there's just really some kind of emergency with the Jazz guard situation. I mean, they've had a ton of games this year where all three of their regular point guards are out injured simultaneously. George, you know, he's another guy who, if they're really needing to kind of bust things open from the three-point line, he's capable of doing that. So I suspect, like, you might be able to get some minutes out of him.
How'd you see the series playing out from the outset, and has one game changed your ultimate view?
You know, it's interesting because as we were watching the last day of the regular season, kind of looking at all the scenarios,
crazy.
Jazz fans were really, really hoping to get matched up with the Blazers. I think there was a perception that the Blazers were maybe beatable with Nurkic out, and with McCollum just barely coming back from injury. And I think Jazz fans really kind of had a perception that this team just doesn't match up well with the Rockets. You know, between all the meetings they've had over the regular season the last 2 years, the five-game series last year, just Harden's incredible scoring ability. And Clint Capella gives Rudy Gobert some trouble as well, as we've seen over these last two playoff seasons. I predicted the Rockets to win the series in 5 or 6, and I think that's probably still the case. Honestly, there are some people at this point wondering if the Jazz will be making a return trip back to Houston after Game 4.
What do you think the Western Conference final matchup will be in a couple of weeks?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people were kind of bummed to see Golden State and Houston wind up on the same side of the bracket. You know, even though the Rockets finished fourth, I think there's a lot of widespread perception out there that, you know, with all the kind of extenuating circumstances they had going on this year with injuries, the slow start, that they're really kind of the second best team in the West. Until someone beats Golden State at this point, you know, you probably have to consider them the favorites. Coming out of the other side, Portland has really proved me wrong. They're looking exceptional right now.
Blazers-Warriors conference final. It's certainly on the board. In fact, right now, it's probably the most likely scenario. Eric Walden on the Jazz beat for the Salt Lake Tribune. Hey, appreciate the time and insight, and we'll see you at the arena tonight.
All right. Thanks for having me, Charlie.